All right, welcome back to the Odd Man Rush, our NHL podcast here at CBSSports.com. This is Greg Simluka, and I'm joined by Aaron Brown and Wes Goldstein. How's everybody doing?
Doing well. How
are
you
doing?
Good.
All right, everybody have a good weekend?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another Sunday-less, hockey-less Sunday this past week, but we did have some action on Saturday, and one of the teams that won on Saturday, would like to start off our show talking about the New York Rangers, 7-1, seven straight wins after dropping their opener to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Is this for real? Are we looking at a legitimate cup contender at this point, or is this just early success like we saw last year from them, which eventually led to their coach getting fired?
Yeah, but I think this is a different team, and I think this is a very real start for the Rangers. They, you know, a lot of people looked at them and before the season and kind of figured this is a playoff bubble team at best, and nobody really knew what to make of them with Tortorella.
Six through nine, basically.
Yeah, and, you know, with Tortorella coming in the middle of last season and, you know, losing after the first round, it was hard to kind of get a fix on where this Ranger team really was. But the truth is the changes they've made in the offseason, adding Gabrick to that lineup and Vinny Prospel, who's had an incredible start, and Alex Kotelik, who's done a job on their power play. Those are like big dynamics that have changed up front. They've added to the defense this kid Michael Delzato, is an amazing rookie. And
it's a big night for him tonight. Game 9.
Yeah, yeah.
Odds are he'll stay. Brooks, I think, has reported that he's already started looking for a place to live. So.
You know, come on. You're not going to send this guy back. This guy this guy has fit in, and he has not looked out of place. He's been a big, big boost to that power play.
Yep.
Him and Kotelik, and that's a big, big difference for that team.
Exactly.
So I don't think he's going anywhere. But it's just the game that they're playing right now, the way John Tortorella, their coach, has them moving, has the defense joining in with the rush, creating. This is an aggressive team, which is something this team was not last year, even in the midst of their great start.
Sure.
They're playing... You know, they're playing the kind of game that really suits their abilities, and right now they have the talent to keep that kind of thing moving. So I think that it's a very, very legitimate start for the Rangers, and I think you're looking at something moving forward.
I would agree with you, except I'm a little hesitant for two reasons. One, does Gabrick stay healthy? I mean, that has to be in the back of everybody's mind.
Of course.
He has been a big part of why they have done well, to finally have a finisher. And the second one being Henrik Lundqvist. And I've said this years and years and years since he's been there, that really the Rangers' success, I think, greatly depends on how well or whether he's not on his game. And I think right now we're seeing the best of Lundqvist. You know, so far I saw he's like fourth in shots faced, and he's been outstanding to have, you know, six straight wins, I believe, for him. So, you know, that's kind of key there. And something down the road, obviously with him, and we mentioned it before, is the Olympics. Chances are he'll play for Sweden. Mm-hmm. And what will that do for him down the stretch? But for now, you know what? They're racking up wins. That's important. It gives them padding. I think at this point, they're at least, you know how you were saying, 6 through 9. I would say definitely 4 through 8. I think they do make the playoffs. I think they look so much better under Tortorella. They're more aggressive.
Right.
You know, the guys that they need to be playing well are playing well. And with the defense, I think I said this to you last week, isn't it funny how, you know, the Rangers in the past have said, oh, well, let's get the top free agent defenseman. Let's just pour money into it. And
sure.
Some of the best defensemen are the kids, and they're looking great. And it really, it's promising for the future for them.
Yeah, I think part of that is because they if they had their druthers, they probably would have gone for the best defenseman available. But finances being what they were, they really couldn't. And they already had two significant contracts in Redden and Roosevelt, and which made it basically either moving them to acquire another defenseman impossible, or, you know, you're certainly not going to try and eat that kind of a contract.
Well, the Madison Square Garden, they probably could if they really wanted
yeah.
to. But, you know, the thing is, even in this system, Redden is actually having
yeah,
a very...
Redden
he looks
very
like a much
well.
Better defenseman playing the kind of up-tempo, aggressive game that Tortorella has them playing.
Right.
And, you know, they just look like they're a much faster team. They're quicker. They're moving the puck with a lot more... deliberateness, I guess, for lack of a better term. They really are playing a solid game. What Aaron mentioned about Lundqvist is very true, but the reality is, in the time he's been with the Rangers post-lockout, he's looked very good all the time, except for that period last year when he was going through. He had personal issues. I guess his dad was sick last year.
Right.
And it was a tough year for him, perhaps mentally, but he has looked really, really sharp.
And he finished strong last year.
He finished very strong. He looks very good, and... You know, they right now the Rangers look very, very good, and Tortorella has them playing. And you know, I guess you've heard this term, Camp Tortorella, what he put them through in training camp.
Sure.
And he really stressed the conditioning, and I think that, you know, it's somehow it's visible when you watch a game, just the energy level they're playing at from start to finish. I just think it's been a very impressive start for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say for the first time in maybe a long time, and you see this a lot with coaches of Tortorella's type, right? That kind of, I don't want to say riding, but, you know, aggressive in your face kind of personality as well as playing style. When you get the right players to match the coaching style, you know, it seems to really, it works out very well. And the Rangers have tried different coaches, different playing styles, and sometimes that didn't always mesh. But now it seems like you have a coaching style that matches the personnel of the team, mm-hmm. and you're seeing that come out on the ice with the success that they've had.
Well, absolutely. And the thing is with the Rangers, you know, their forward crew, you have, you're talking about Gabrick, mm-hmm. the potential of being injured. And I agree. I think that's always in the back of everybody's mind.
Sure.
But I think the one thing that Glenn Sather kept stressing when he signed them in the summer, and that Gabrick stressed as well, and his agent stressed, is that when he did come back from that surgery, which mm-hmm. basically cost him the entire season with Minnesota last year,
right.
he came back for 11 or 12 games and he looked really, really good. There was mm-hmm. no sign of this. And maybe taking that year off and having this surgery finally was the trick mm-hmm. that, you know, whatever it is. But he is playing, and Gabrick's been great, and Tortorella's getting these guys to move the puck from the back end. And, you know, right now it's clicking.
Yeah, there's no doubt when he's healthy, he's absolutely phenomenal. And I believe, what was it, there was a year in Minnesota where he missed half the season, came back, played half, and had like 40 goals in 40 games. Yeah. And it was just unbelievable. Yeah. And you were sitting there saying, well, what is he going to do if he's healthy? And
sure, that's always been the big if.
I mean, you guys have to admit, if you're a Rangers fan, you are holding your breath a little bit. If you see him just kind of grimace or something, it's got to be... You know.
No, granted. But, you know, but let's face it. Any team that, you know, might lose a player of his caliber from their, you know, their marquee player is going to suffer. I mean,
yes.
Pittsburgh exactly. almost could get away with it, because if you lose Crosby, you have Malkin, or vice versa to some extent. But
right.
obviously you'd feel the loss. But
yep.
Taking Gabrick, but, you know, assume that he is staying healthy, and so far he looks it, you know. Mm-hmm.
And the good thing is, with the success that the power play has had so far early on in the season, not a whole lot of it has come from him. It's been
he gets all his goals in the third period.
Third period, right. Exactly. all six.
Not bad either.
No. They've been, you know, very key time. So it's been he's been a clutch player for them for sure.
And it also indicates that everybody talks about, you know, when you think about it in a bigger picture, you talk about the problems he's had with his legs and his groins and everything, the injuries. If he's scoring in the third period, he still has legs in the third period.
Right. Yeah.
Which,
right.
you know, suggested that there is, you know, he is pretty healthy for mm-hmm. the most part.
Yeah, and I don't remember if it was Saturday's game or the game prior, but he had the most ice time for Ranger forward. So he's definitely, you know, getting the minutes out there, you know, early on the season, testing it out. I'm sure, you know, some of the earlier games, certainly in the preseason, it was, you know, easy as she goes. But Gabrick has definitely been out on the ice a lot for the Rangers this year.
Tortorella is pulling the right strings so far.
All right, well, let's stay with Tortorella since the good jump that good start to the season that the Rangers have had, and taking a look at some of the problems elsewhere, perhaps he would be a better fit to take over the reins of Team USA with Ron Wilson and the Toronto Maple Leafs struggling.
Obviously you can't make a change at this point. I think, you know, Team USA is not going in as a favorite for the gold.
Right.
You don't want to be messing with your coaching staff after you've already held an orientation camp. But it does bring to light, maybe instead of saying this is the head coach, maybe you do have a group of coaches, and when it comes time to put the team together, you say this is the guy we're going with. I mean, let's face it, the guys who are there, Wilson, Tortorella, and I believe Gordon, they're all going to have input into that team. So,
sure.
you know, maybe the decision should have been, you know, delayed, but, you know, with Brian Burke at the helm and his friendship with Ron Wilson, unlikely to happen. But, yeah, it would be interesting to see.
Especially now. I mean, with that friendship intact, you know, I mean, if the decision hadn't been made and it was just you had this, you know, triumvirate of coaches, and all of a sudden now, you know, Burke decides to lean and say Tortorella or somebody else's direction mm-hmm. from Wilson's, then yeah, I mean, that could potentially put a strain on their relationship inside the business.
Yes.
You know, but also outside.
Yeah. And it does make you wonder. You look at what Tortorella has done, and it does. It makes you wonder what kind of team would Team USA put out with the Tortorella mentality. You figure, you know, every person on the Rangers, they can hand pick their team. Certainly you can find the players to fit the exact roles on
right.
Team USA.
I believe it was Herb Brooks who said he didn't want the best players, he wanted the right players. Is that paraphrasing?
Yeah.
It's easy to say that after you win.
But see, I thought he said that before.
Yeah, maybe he did. I don't remember, you know. But, you know, the thing is, the bigger question now, they're not going to – I mean, it's a USA Hockey decision. Burke obviously mm-hmm. has a big input. They're not going to make a difference. I think the first question we have to ask is, will Ron Wilson have any wins before the Olympics?
And, oh, you know, come on.
Yeah, you know, I mean, things are quite bad in Toronto, but I don't think they're that
okay,
bad.
Okay, they're not bad. But the point is that really the larger point I'm trying to make here is that when he does get to coach the U.S. Team USA, he will have a better collection of talent than he does
yes.
right now. So the thing is, and this is really goes back to the reason what Brian Burke was saying last week about Ron Wilson and his future. He's not going anywhere. He mm-hmm. said before
sure.
the coach goes anywhere, there's going to be a lot of shakeup of the personnel. He said Ron Wilson has coached over 1,000 games
that's
in the
right.
NHL. Mm-hmm. He hasn't forgotten how to coach.
And he's also succeeded at the international level.
Yes.
Yeah, he has. You know, so the thing is, Toronto is not a very talented team right now. I think we can all agree that mm-hmm. perhaps, you know, as Aaron was saying earlier, that maybe a lot of people just kind of jumped on the bandwagon too early with them and assumed because they signed all these players.
Yeah.
They signed a lot of players, but, you know, they don't seem to be helping them a great deal. The defense is not much better. The toughness factor really makes no difference.
Right.
Wilson's tried everything, even to the point of having a practice last week. They're throwing tennis balls at each other. You know, they're goofing.
Maybe that's why they're losing.
No.
Wrong sport.
I mean, you know,
it was just to try and lighten the mood and get everybody.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
To relax, ease the tension a little bit.
And obviously it didn't work because, you know, they really got whipped pretty badly the next game against the Rangers. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it really, especially that game, it points to the talent level differences because, you know, they did a lot of good things, especially through the first two periods, and they were losing 3-1. So that just tells you right there that even when they're, you know, they're getting shots, they're getting a lot of, you know, play towards the net, and you come out of that down two goals, letting in three, and very early in the third period they let up a fourth goal. So now they're down 4-1. So it's like, you know, well, we don't know what to do at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you're right. They were creating some offense, not all that sustained, but from
right.
time to time, Lundqvist was pretty good in that game, and he kept them at bay. And, you know, the Leafs are a team that get burned by their mistakes. I mean, the 3-on-1, McDonald was playing goal. He didn't get over on Dubinsky's goal. And, you know, the thing, little things that
sure.
if they do make a mistake, it's going to kill them. It's not
mm-hmm.
like they don't seem to be getting away with anything, but you have to have some, you know, you have to better level of talent to be able to get away with mistakes sometimes. And right now, they don't have any leeway, any margin for error whatsoever.
Yeah, no, definitely. And goaltending is definitely a position that that they're struggling with, and they have been for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not the only ones. We can also talk about two big-name goalies that are not maybe playing up to the level they're used to, Roberto Luongo and Marty Brodeur. And this being an Olympic year, you know, you'd think that they'd come out of the gates flying, hoping to secure their spot, and not only secure a spot. I believe earlier on one of our shows, we talked about them competing for the starter's job.
Right.
But
mm-hmm.
at this point, I'm not sure that they're the best candidates.
Well, and it's going to be a very interesting question, you know, because mm-hmm. really those two guys are seen as the locks. I mean, it's got to be Brodeur, Luongo, Brodeur. Everybody's mind Canada. That was, you know, there was no question going in there. And their early play, if you're basing it on the early play, neither of them has looked good. Both of them have been, you know, their save percentages are in the 880s, if not lower, I believe. They're not looking sharp. They're not looking comfortable in the net.
Right.
They're not winning that many games. I mean, their teams are basically around
500.
Yeah, 500 level teams, which is
one above, one below. So
it's not really the kind of performance that anybody would expect from these guys. And quite honestly, as you get closer, if this doesn't turn around for them, as you get closer to December when rosters have to be picked, then you have to start asking yourself: is Steve Yzerman, who's heading the brain trust for Team Canada, does he go with what is actually happening on the ice with the best candidate, or does he go out of loyalty your reputation. Mm. And, you know, it's a very tough thing not to include a guy, you know, who's been there before, like Brodeur, or a guy like Luongo, who theoretically is one of the best goalies in the world. But if they're not playing up to it, what do you do? I mean, you can't, Canada can't afford not to win this
tournament. Do you trust the fact that these guys are big-time, big-game goalies? Well, at least for Brodeur's sake.
Yeah, but you know what?
And they're going to get the job done when called upon.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Marc-Andre Fleury and Cam Ward have both won Stanley Cups, too.
Yes, they have.
You don't necessarily see them in the same, class at this point in their careers as those two guys, but they've won Stanley Cups.
I'm sure if you ask Carolina and Pittsburgh, they'd say that they see them in the same class,
Steve Mason's won gold at the World Juniors. So, I mean, it's going to be an
Fleury
interesting...
Fleury did too, didn't he?
Fleury did.
I thought he did.
He may have won one, but he also blew one.
He lost it.
He
passed it off the back of the defenseman that went in back over his head to give U.S. their first gold.
Yes.
No complaints.
Like it was
there.
Yesterday.
You remember that, huh? So, I think there's going to be some choices. It's going to be an interesting debate moving forward. And, you know, you have the same debate going on for Team USA now, too.
But I think we have agreed that if Ryan Miller doesn't get it, I mean, with the start he's off to, it seems pretty secure. And I think with the way Tim Thomas has not done so well, I think for a while there may have been a question as to whether one of those two will be the starter. But I think Miller has separated himself. I think I think he's one. And then you've also mentioned Wes
Craig
about
Anderson.
Craig.
Craig Anderson since the Team USA orientation. He wasn't invited, but I think people overlooked him, and people didn't realize how well he played in Florida last year, and the fact that he has a chance to start in Colorado,
How well he's doing, this year.
Wow,
so
really, what a different, what a, you know, if you're talking about one particular difference maker so far, you know, he's absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, I would like to bring in for the first time this year Ross Devenport, our CBSSports.com fantasy hockey expert. Ross, how are you?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm very well. Yourself?
Not too bad. It's great to have you back on the Odd Man Rush.
Thank you. Yeah, it takes me a couple of weeks to get into the swing of things here with baseball finishing up.
Sure.
Football getting going. You know, hockey.
Well, plus after 1 week, it's hard to say this guy's a great or bad pick already, right?
Yeah, we had a long first fantasy week with, I think we started on a Wednesday or a Thursday. Right. I think it was an 11-day fantasy period. So we're almost sort of 2.5 weeks in.
Right.
And as you guys were talking about goalies, I thought we'd look at three surprises and sort of three disappointments.
Sure.
So far this season.
Lay it on us, big man.
Just going back to what you were talking about there, Craig Anderson. I mean, is this a product? Is this him or is this the Avalanche?
I think it's him.
6-1-1, 2.09 goals against. And this last week he had 4 starts.
Right.
And you figured maybe two or three wins. He beats Boston, Montreal, and Detroit.
Four starts for a goalie is rare and fantastic from a fantasy perspective.
I mean, I think Lou Miller has him in I-League, and I was going against him this week and got destroyed in fantasy. This was a guy who was 133rd pick on average in drafts this year, and he was obviously a flyer that he's put up some decent stats in his previous years, and if you went back and looked. But
it's always tough, though. I mean, you can help me out here from a fantasy perspective to find that, hey, this guy is basically a career backup, right?
Sure.
And all of a sudden, now he's getting his first chance. I mean, when you look historically at the guys that have made that leap, not all of them have turned out, to play well.
No, it's definitely
a difficult transition.
I mean, obviously, on my disappointment list is Mike Smith in Tampa Bay, who's back up in Dallas.
Yep.
Last year was hurt, and this year I took a flyer on him on my team, and he's been absolutely disgusting.
How much of that, though, is Tampa Bay?
We'll have to see. I mean, two weeks in fantasy is a little early to panic.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But especially when leagues like ours, when you start two goalies, and your second one is often a risky guy, and if your number one guy's not performing, I have Cristobal Huey, who's another guy.
Is he another disappointment on your list?
He didn't quite make it yet. He had a decent outing last week. I'm 0-2, and so is Aaron. Who,
yeah. Well,
Aaron Thomas in right now.
Yeah, and then my backup's Toskala, and I've already lost Franz, and then I lost
Vanek.
It's just falling apart.
You got your violin handy there?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yes,
I'll Craig Anderson, I mean, what do you guys think of it? Definitely someone worth picking up in all formats? What about the leagues that
start
one goalie?
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you start
him for now till the shine.
Ride the tide. I mean, the team's playing well in front of him, and he's certainly there to pick up the pieces should something fall apart. And like we've said in the past, and a lot of shows last year when the debate was Vokoun or Anderson, You know, we're saying, hey, listen, Anderson's playing far better, so you got to keep going with him, and I don't see any difference right now.
It was very very rare, I think, that he had a terrible, terrible game. There were a lot of games where if the Panthers lost, it was like a 3-2 loss, but he might stop like 60 shots. And I do believe he's up there in shots faced.
Oh, I'm sure.
So, I mean, from that standpoint, even if he doesn't get you the win all the time, if the Colorado Avalanche come back to earth eventually, you know, he's still going to be pretty solid. And I think at this point there's no question that he is their number one. Budai is not.
No, yeah, he's not going to.
Yeah.
Another guy who's got off to a good start is Pascal Leclerc. But I was looking at his last four wins. You ready for this? Toronto, Islanders, Tampa Bay, and Montreal.
So, hey,
he's 4-2 with a 2.17 though. So,
right.
I mean,
you still have to make the saves, right? Regardless of the level of the competition. So,
he's one of these guys that was, you know, obviously a big injury risk coming in, and
right,
was no guarantee to get as many starts as he has done so far over Elliott. But another guy, 112th pick overall. You know, something like 9th and 10th round as a third guy in most leagues, and has really shown up early. So keep an eye on him over these next couple of weeks when he has to face some real opponents. and my third surprise this year, his stats aren't that great. He's only 4-3 with a 3.15. But Jonathan Quick, I think he's had one or two shutouts already. He's had one or two one-goal games he's had. But two of his four wins have come against last-place teams. But this was another guy, 161st pick on average, that many guys just...
I'm sure they didn't even know who he was. You know, it's probably part of the problem.
But he's probably got a little better supporting cast than some of those other two, possibly. So, and he's another guy who's definitely worth picking up, I think, as a third option, if not a second option, in deeper leagues that start one goalie. Toronto, as Aaron knows, with Mr. Toscolo on the bench.
I must be the curse, then. What anyone I pick up in fantasy just destroys them.
I want to get your thoughts on this situation. Who would you rather have at the moment on your bench? Obviously, Gustafsson is banged up as well as Toscolo and Jari McDonald. Which of those three would you rather have for the next month or so?
Can I not have anyone on the bench?
No, you have to pick one of them.
I have to pick one from Toronto?
Yeah. Because two of them, Toscolo and Gustafsson are owned in a decent amount of leagues.
Yeah,
not a huge amount, but a decent amount.
I wouldn't pick Toscolo. I think he has zero confidence right now. I think the team doesn't have a lot of confidence in him when he's, you know, in the net. So I would definitely not go that route.
So you would go with the monster?
Yes. Give me the beast.
Well, Jari McDonald showed up last year at times early on.
At times, but I mean, I think you got to look at it as, you know, the direction of the organization and the future, and at best he's a stopgap,
right?
So you know, if I had to choose, I'd let my future show his worth.
And back to Mr. Smith. How long do I stick with this guy? You think Nedimaki's going to end up being the number one there?
I've never been impressed with him, honestly.
Tell me this now.
Well, no, I have said this before.
Well, I'm sure she's not going to tell you in the middle of a draft, oh, you know what, I'm not impressed with him, or else don't pick him up.
I'm not listening to his teammates anymore. I forget who it was they were interviewing on the radio the other day, and he was saying, this was before the season started, that Smitty had a great preseason and was looking great. I felt really good about picking him up, and then... Yeah,
no, I've never been impressed with him. I didn't buy it when they traded for him and they said, oh, this is our number one, this is our guy. I never bought it. For whatever reason, with the exception of Hobby Bolin the year they won the Cup, Tampa Bay is a goaltending graveyard. I just didn't think he was going to succeed there. I still don't think he's going to succeed there. You know, I think the numbers that he put up in Dallas were because he was playing in Dallas. And generally, if you look at history, backup goalies excel pretty well there. So
I'm going to drop him and get back to my desk.
How about a trade? I'll give you Toscolo for Mike Smith.
you know I'm a Leafs fan as well, so that might we'll have to think about that one. Finally, my final disappointment is Pekka Rinne, who's got an 0-3 record and a 3.46 goals against. Now, obviously the Predators aren't helping him much on the offensive side of things with a total of 10 goals so far this season, which is one more than Mr. Ovechkin, but you know, Rinne was the 12th goalie taken in fantasy leagues this year, so a low-end number one guy who's really underperformed so far. But do you see this Nashville offense coming around and helping him out a bit and this him rebounding in this next month or so?
No.
That's a tough one.
Well, I mean, not to the point where, you know, he'll become a viable fantasy asset.
Not at all.
Mm-mm.
I mean, he was a hot option coming in. I mean,
he had a great
look, but maybe, you know, if you're, you know, maybe you want to hold on and keep him on your bench if you have a spot open and you have two mm-hmm. other goalies if you're in a two-goalie format.
Sure.
You know, for the most part, I wouldn't start looking to Nashville just yet as far as fantasy help from a goaltender.
Okay. No, and I think there's definitely the case of whenever with sophomores, you know, concern of the sophomore slump, and he might be in the midst of one. But you know what? I'd take him over Toscolo right now on my bench with the two-goalie format. So,
and Mr. Simaluku, you're the only one of us, the three of us, with a win so far in fantasy. How are you pleased with your combo of, obviously, Fleury?
Yeah, I mean,
start and Turco. Are you pleased with
Turco
combo?
You know, I mean, you hate to call him a flyer at this stage, you know, of his career, but certainly Fleury's carrying the load, and Pittsburgh's playing well enough, and so it's not bad. Obviously, it could be better, but you know, there's not very many great options in terms of changing. So for me, I think it's more about my forwards and defense doing what they need to do, and that's. You know, Datsuk got hurt, so it'll be interesting to see.
Who's your third option? Do you remember?
Not sure I have one.
No, he was just the two.
Yeah,
living on the edge.
Yes,
dangerous man, similar to Walt. We're going into Fantasy Week 3 starting tonight, so don't forget to set your lineups. Probably by 6:55. What time's the first game tonight? Probably 7:07. Yeah, as I said, we're a combined 1-5 so far, but hopefully we'll improve. I went up against the Juggernaut, Lou Miller, so
I remember last year. I think I started off like
0-4,
something really bad.
And then you won like almost double what you had lost in the beginning.
Yeah, and then
to go
I
to like 8-4 or something like that.
And then I ended up winning it all, but I don't think that's going to happen this year. I don't have Ovechkin, and I've already lost two top scorers, and my goaltenders are a total disaster.
Doesn't mean you can't go out and get him.
What?
Doesn't mean you can't go out and get Mr. Ovechkin. You know,
I'll just trade my whole team to get him and then have to pick up the
favor. It still might be worth it. It still might be worth it.
At the pace he's on. Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, my face-offs column with Mike Kirkham will be up later today, I think, or early tomorrow morning. So check that out and check out our questions for this week. And good luck in Fantasy Week 3.
Thanks a lot, Ross. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Fantastic as always. And we'll welcome back Mr. Wes Goldstein. As I want to talk transactions and Boston making the early move, trading Chuck Kobosu to the Minnesota Wild for Craig Weller, the rights to Falstrom, I believe, Alexander Falstrom. And a second-round pick in the 2011, or the rights to the second-round pick in 2011 draft. So, all right, here's Boston seeing the lack of early success and make some move to, I guess, shake things up. I mean,
shake things up, send a message. Peter Chiarelli, their GM, is not happy, and neither is Julian.
And as I was saying, they can't be pleased in Minnesota either.
But the thing is, Minnesota, it's a separate issue too, because they're winless at this point, and they need some offense. And Kobosu might be able to help in that regard. He might end up on a second line instead of a third line.
Third line, yeah.
But I think what Chiarelli was saying publicly the last few days is he is not. It's one thing to have a slow start. What he is dissatisfied with at this point is really the way the team has looked, and so they've kind of looked a little too cocky and arrogant coming off last season and everything. You know, maybe read too many of their own clippings and think that they just have to show up to win, because last year they were a really, really good team.
Sure.
But he said, you know what, we won only one playoff round last year. So that's what it comes down to. And he said everybody's coming in here and not, you know, playing the kind of game that he expects them to play. So this is, you know, one thing, it's a bit of a message that he's sending. You know, trading a guy who's, you know, been with that team, and you're getting rid of him, you're shaking him, said, you know what, the changes are not out of the question here if you guys don't get your act together. It gives a chance to bring up a couple of kids from the minors who had very good training camps, and, you know, they lost Lucic on the weekend too. Mm-hmm. So
right.
They have to do something, because, you know what, at this point, it's still early in the season, but you lose too many points now. And as we always say, it's a tough year this year with the compressed schedule. You can't afford to let, you know, problems linger too long.
Right. And, I mean, injuries being what they are, they'd be without him anyway. But what about the Kessel situation? I mean, is this a realization of how much they're missing his abilities?
I don't think, you know, their offense, they're not scoring as much as they did last year. And, you know, having Kessel obviously, you know, compounds that. But it's their overall team play. They're just not winning puck battles. They're not playing well on their own end. They're not aggressive. They're not coming at people the way they did.
Everything they did last year, right?
Right.
Yeah,
Tim Thomas is not
playing. Complete reversal.
Tim Thomas earned the contract of his life in the offseason. He's not playing well. I mean, you know, for whatever that the correlation is there, you can speculate on your own. But the thing is, he's not playing well. He's a Vezina Trophy winner, and he's got a save percentage in the 880s right now, right. And that's not good enough.
And again, it's here's a guy that you figured going into the season on an Olympic year would be, you know, playing doing everything he could to try and solidify not only a spot on the team, but had a very legitimate shot as being the starter
right.
for Team USA. And now it's maybe not so much.
I wonder if the lack of a challenge is one of the things that hasn't has put Thomas in the situation he is now, because you remember the last couple of years, it's always been the question of, well, is he really the number one? Is he really the number one? He was always having to go against somebody, usually Manny Fernandez, who's no longer with the team. Now they got Tuukka Rask, who's a rookie.
Right.
He's, without question, after a Vezina year, he's their number one goalie, and he doesn't have the push to have to prove himself anymore. Maybe, you know, is that part of the problem?
I mean, are the Olympics that far, perhaps, off his mind that he doesn't see the fight then being with Ryan Miller? I mean, can't you always, as an athlete, find something to compete against?
Yeah.
I mean, even if it's, I want to be better than Tim Thomas 08-09.
Right, but the thing is this. And, you know, I think, honestly, for the players, the Olympics is in the back of most people's mind. It's not a priority for a lot of players. I mean, there are players who know they're going. There are players who are in the bubble who want to make the team. But the truth is, that kind of mindset of where, you know, like, I want to step up, kind of show things, you're not going to see probably till December, till the last couple of weeks when the decisions are going to be really made. Because right now, everybody's still at the start of a season. People are going through. The priorities now is for everybody's own team. And how you start the season.
Course.
And, you know, and Thomas, you know, I don't know if Thomas is thinking about besting Ryan Miller right now. Obviously, he's thinking about doing the best job he can, but Boston is not playing well around him.
Right.
And, you know, that factors into a goalie's performance.
Sure.
He's not maybe stealing games the way he might have last year, but
yeah.
I think the whole team, there's a malaise around the team, and that's what
definitely.
I think Chiarelli's trying to change by sending a message, you know, I'm not training the biggest player, but a guy who's part of the team.
It's a very
certainly
strategic
he's a piece,
and tactical
right.
yeah.
and,
maneuver.
Yeah, and the other thing is, too, that by moving him, he takes, like, I think it's $2.6 million off
right.
his cap, so it gives him a little more room to maneuver. Mm-hmm. A little bit later on, because the rookies
sure.
he brought up are not that expensive.
Yeah, I mean, I think we hit the nail on the head earlier with them, where it's just everything that they did right last year, regardless of how much they're scoring this year versus last year, or how much they're letting in this year versus last year. It's battles for the puck. It's, you know, how hard they're working, how well they're, you know, moving the puck around and getting quality chances. Those things that they did so well last year, I mean, they would play against, you know, the best teams in the league during the regular season and made them bend their will to the
right.
Bruins style of game.
They dictated the game.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that they did that, you know, better than anybody until the playoffs came around after the first round. Then they, you know, it ended for them, unfortunately, and maybe they're still, you know, in shock from that. I don't know, but they're certainly not playing the way they played last year.
Well, that's what I wrote last week
right.
when I talked
right.
about the Bruins.
Yep.
It's almost a continuation of the lingering problems they had last year. They had 9 days off between their first and
yep.
second round,
yep.
and that was just too long to have off for a team that had that kind of momentum
right.
going in the playoffs, and they just never could regain it. They did, you know, manage to stretch it to a seventh game, but that really was almost by sheer force of will rather than, you know, having anything left that, you know, would lead them to win.
Sure.
And I think this year they've played in that same kind of slow thing. I just want to mention one thing before we go. We talked about goalies. Did anybody see the goal that Cristobal Huey let in Saturday night to Dallas, the winning goal? It came off the backboards, bounced in from the side, hit his arm, and went in.
No, but nothing's going my way.
Yeah, you almost got to feel sorry for the guy, because
right.
that is one of the most embarrassing goals I've ever seen in my life.
Do you think
well,
worse
than Henrik's?
I was thinking that.
Yeah, I mean that, because I mean that comes off the, you know, the backboards. You don't see it; it's unsuspecting. But, you know, shot from the red line that you're just trying to carefully guide into the corner that you just basically whiff on.
Yeah, well, no, listen, I've seen it. I saw Jacques Lemaire score a goal on Tony Esposito from his own blue line.
Right.
You know, won the Stanley Cup once. But the thing is, this goal, it just came off on the side, and he didn't get close enough to post, and it just hit his arm and went in. I'm thinking,
right.
wow. So that's why I had to say that. But anyway.
I was just going to say one quick question about Hue. Do you think the fact that he was sitting for a good part of last season maybe did something to his game?
Because, a little rust?
Because going into last season,
right,
he wasn't a terrible goaltender. This was a guy that I think only a couple of years prior was leading the league in save percentage. He could be a very reliable goalie. I wouldn't rate him on like an elite scale, but a good like B okay. to B plus goalie. Do you think that not playing just totally wrecked him?
Well, here's the thing. The reason he was not playing was because when he did play, he wasn't playing well. They signed him to be their number one goalie.
Yes.
They made him their number one goalie. They tried to give away Nikolai Habibulin. Please, anybody, take him. Russia, go home. We'll pay for your plane ticket.
Right.
Anything you want, you go. Leave him alone. We have Cristobal Hue. And Cristobal Hue lost his job to
yes.
a guy that they couldn't wait to get rid of. So if he sat on his bench, did it hurt his confidence? Maybe. But again.
So what happened?
You know,
maybe
if
it's like
we had
the
answers to that, we'd be in a different field, I'm sure.
And we'd be writing books and selling.
Yes, exactly.
Why Cristobal Hue has a bad
season? Ask Chuck Knobloch and Mackie Sasser why they can't throw the ball, the thing that they've done a million times in their career. Steve Sachs.
As long as we can call it Odd Man Rush Consulting or something.
Yeah. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this week's Odd Man Rush, as Wes so aptly points out. And we will get back to you next week. I want to thank you again on behalf of Aaron Brown, Wes Goldstein, and Greg Simlucas saying see you next week.